We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What is up, everyone? It's that wonderful time of year where we got to file those taxes. Everyone enjoys it. Who doesn't love filing their taxes? But don't worry, if you don't love it, like I jokingly made, we got some help here. We got someone over at DFS Accounting, Mike Feuerstein, who's going to help us out with some tax questions for DFS, for sports betting, for Rainmakers. How you doing over there, Mike?
I'm good, Grant. Thanks for having me. It's been pretty hectic the last couple of months, but we got 2 weeks left, so it's time for the final stretch and get these tax returns filed.
Yep. No, I still have not filed mine, but I guess we can just get right into something that's important since we're, less than 2 weeks out. Filing extensions. Something that we should probably talk about is a lot of people don't know what an extension is. A lot of people don't know what an extension does. A lot of people don't know what's required for an extension. I have to file one. I do pretty much every year just because it's a pain doing my taxes with all the sports betting and DFS and all my other activities and waiting on K-1s and this and that. So a lot of people I know have not ever filed an extension. They just assume that you have to file on April 15th. So what is an extension? How do you go about it? When do you need to go about it? And what happens if you don't file an extension?
Right, exactly. So, you know, everyone knows that April 15th is the filing deadline. That's what everyone just focuses in on. But say, for instance, life, you know, it's been too hectic. You haven't had time to file your tax returns. You got plenty of stuff, like you were saying, Grant. So you can file an extension. Now, one of the things that people think is that if you file an extension, you could extend to pay, right? If you owe, let's extend it out. But that is not the case. When you file an extension, you're technically just filing an extension to file. And that extended deadline is October 15th, okay? But if you find yourself that you owe or you do owe or you end up owing money, the IRS says that the deadline for that payment is April 15th. So it's just something to be clear. You could extend the filing of your tax return, but if you owe money, you have to pay it on April 15th.
Okay. Is there any leeway? Like I can't even remember the rules. I generally just pay over anyways. Right. Is there any leeway on like if you, let's say you owe $1,000 by the time you actually file your tax return, but you only paid in an extra $900 on what you thought you were going to owe? Is it just a penalty for that extra $100 in taxes that you owe? Is it going to be interest? Is it going to be penalties? What is it going to be?
Right, exactly. So if you can't make the payment or you did make, like you said, $900, but you actually owed $1,000, so $100 remaining, there is a late payment penalty and they also tack on interest as well. So the IRS sort of becomes a creditor, right? You owe the IRS money. It's like a loan. So you kind of want to get your tax return done as soon as possible if you're on extension and make that payment because the juice is running.
Yeah. Or if you make that payment, you can always put in a little bit extra if you want to be careful, make sure you don't get the penalties. If it's not a big deal, if you have that money on hand, I mean, that's why I generally do every year. I almost always have a refund or stuff rolling forward, not saying for everyone, but it's it's not the worst idea in the world if you want to be overly cautious and make sure you don't get those late fees or those penalties or that collected interest. So, yeah, just something to keep in mind that I was keeping in mind. All right. Now that we've got that out of the way, for anyone who's wondering, what do I do? I can't get my taxes done on time. Let's talk about sports betting, Rainmakers, DFS. What is considered taxable income? Because I know a lot of people, they'll be getting multiple, if they hit a big win, multiple 1099 Gs, and they're like, what's going on? I've lost money. Or I made money in DFS, but I didn't make 600. I didn't get a 1099. Like, do I have to pay taxes on that? What is taxable income?
Right, exactly. So the taxable income that you're going to get, right, is gambling, any sort of form of gambling income. Right now in this conversation, we're talking about sports betting. So to get down the basics in sports betting, in the world of gambling, the tax document that's going to be sent to the IRS is a W-2G, right? And you kind of alluded to it, that, you know, the thresholds to have a W-2G file with the IRS is pretty high, meaning you have to hit a 301 bet and have that bet pay out more than $600. So what we're talking about are like 15, 16 leg parlays, right, that has a plus 30,000 odds for you to hit. It's very rare. So what's going to happen is you're not going to have any documents sent to you if you're primarily sports betting. So what the taxpayer needs to do, the individual needs to do, is that you got to keep track of your own records. Now, the operators in the casinos, they do have a win-loss statement that they give you. And so technically, the IRS states that you have to report your worldwide income. So if you were to look at that, you know, annual summary from the casinos and you see that, hey, I actually won $40,000, but you still didn't get a tax document, you will have to, you should report that on your tax return in this hypothetical situation.
Yep. No, I mean, I know I'm a sports bettor, but I'm rarely throwing in those massive parlays. Like,
right,
I can win something over $600 regularly, but I get no tax forms outside of once or twice for any wins, because, you know, it's under 300-1 odds, or it's just under 301 odds. But 301 odds, chances are I'm betting more than $2 on it, so it'd be over $600. Right. Bucks. But yeah, so just because you didn't does not mean that you don't owe money gambling. And just because you've received some 1099 Gs, let's say you've received 50,000 of them because you had a lot of long shots, but you look and you've lost $100,000 during that time. These are big numbers I'm just randomly throwing out there. Right. So this kind of brings us over to the concept of sessions, because in some scenarios that might not be taxable. In some scenarios that could be taxable, from my general understanding. It all depends on the session. So what is a session from the IRS standpoint? How can you kind of use that to your advantage, and what ways are allowed and not allowed?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So if, say, for instance, you do have gambling, right, you hit a couple big wins or what have you. So the IRS wants you to report your net gross winnings and your net gross losses. I'm sure everyone has heard that, yes, you could deduct your losses, and how you get there is determining your session. So this session was a concept that was created long, long time ago when you, me, and everyone else would actually physically go to the casino, whether in Jersey or Nevada, right, and place our bets. Or you would go to, you know, the casino and go play blackjack, right? The IRS said, like, listen, we don't want to see every hand you place playing blackjack. So whatever happens in that session, whatever the net result is, that's how we want you to report on your tax return. So you play 300 days out of the year, you have some net win sessions and you have some net loss sessions, and you put them in those columns, your win loss, and whatever gets grossed up is how you report on your tax return. So if you had 50 days or 50 sessions of $1,000 wins, you would report $50,000 on your tax return. And if you had 25 sessions or 25 days, whatever, of losses, you would put $25,000 as losses. Now, losses are reported as an itemized deduction. So your tax return, your income's going over here, and your itemized deduction is going over here. And the problem is, with the new tax law that came into effect in 2018, your standard deduction increased, reducing the value of your itemized deduction. See, so you have to take the higher of your itemized deduction or your standard. So when your standard, the floor is higher, what happens is theoretically your gambling losses may be limited or reduced, thus paying in more taxes. Do you see how that goes, that fact pattern? So what we're trying to do is this. We're trying to increase your session to, say, an annual session. So instead of reporting $50,000 in income and $25,000 in losses, you're just reporting $25,000 in wins. That's it, which is normal, right? That makes sense. You report your net winnings.
Yeah. So, I mean, for a general person, for some people who are automatically itemizing, this sessions may not make a difference. Like, guy making millions of dollars who itemized deductions every year. But for a standard guy making 50, 70, 80, 90K a year, who are taking the standard deduction every single year instead of the itemized deduction, let's say you had a whole bunch of different sessions and all your sessions added up to 50K in wins and 20K or 10K in losses, standard deductions over 10K. So you get absolutely no benefit in that scenario from taking your losses because your itemized deductions are lower than your standard deductions. So yeah, this whole concept of a session for a full year, for some people, it may not actually matter, but for the vast majority of people and anyone taking the standard deductions, it almost always matters. So have there been any new laws put in place since 2018 on this subject? I know it's all new in the sports betting realm. Obviously, it's only been around in most states for about 4 years, 5 years. Mm-hmm. So have there been any new laws put into place for taxing gambling income?
Nothing material at the moment right now. There was a memo that came out for daily fantasy sports that came out in 2020 that it basically said that IRS is of the opinion that daily fantasy sports is now considered gambling, which I don't vehemently disagree. And then what that does is that if you are an individual that plays DFS, but you also sports bet, then those two incomes, those two revenue then come together as one, as gambling income. So I get a lot of questions. Hey, can you offset your DFS losses with your gambling wins? And then since then, we've taken the position is yes, you can, because DFS is considered gambling. Aside from that, you know, it's still a gray area out there. You know, I'm sure things are going to be coming down the pipeline right now that more and more taxpayers are going to have gambling income on their tax returns, right? There's going to be more focus on that regard. And then that's why, you know, getting back to sessions it's important for you to understand that and basically look at your betting structure, right? I threw out annual sessions, but if you're picking and popping and only, you know, betting in the summer because you like baseball and then you don't do anything else, or you bet once or twice in the fall, then it's really tough to position yourself, you know, as an annual session. So one has to be true to their betting strategies. But yeah, there hasn't been any clear-cut guidance so far as to, you know, how to, that the IRS saying, hey, you can do annual sessions or whatnot. It's based on the taxpayer and then presenting them their information to the IRS.
Yeah, so that brings up another interesting issue. So sports betting, DFS, according to the IRS, according to that memo at least, it says that they are essentially the same thing. They're essentially both gambling, which whether you agree with that or not, certain states obviously differ in this opinion. I know certain states have DFS as legally gambling. AGs just went out and said it. I know there was a whole bunch of problems back in, 2014 after the Ethangate thing, and so that's why certain states do not allow DFS because they consider it gambling and they don't allow gambling without a license. I know Nevada's technically that way. So that adds another question to this. Table games, slots, for the average gambler or for even someone who does it for a profession, are those income or losses able to be deducted or offset by sports betting losses or gains?
Yes, correct. We're of the position that you could offset all that put together. Now, you bring up a good point in regard to the tail games and slots, right? So now I'm seeing in my sports betting, I got sports betting, DFS, and the casinos right up there. And I just want to warn everybody out there is that the W-2G, right, the gambling tax form that gets sent to the IRS, the threshold is now a lot lower than it is with sports betting. So if you're sitting there with the, you know, you're playing online slots, and you get a pull and you hit over $1,200, that payout $1,200, you're going to get a W-2G and you're going to have to report that to the IRS. And so the whole goal is that we want to mitigate how much gets reported to the IRS, because that allows the taxpayer to present their tax situation accordingly, you know. And so just be careful out there when you're playing the casino games, is that if you do hit a slot, then you're going to have to get a W-2G and report on your tax return. But yeah, any losses will be able to offset your DFS income and your income from sports betting.
Yeah, and just something I saw the other day, I don't know if it's actually going to go through, but I think they're raising that amount to $3,600, at least I think in the state of Nevada, which
all right.
That's the good. Only place where I actually place lots. So I tend to stay away from big payouts of $1,200 just because it's not worth my time. Like,
yeah, exactly.
$1099. But, I mean, to each their own, and I mean, it's just a little bit more work if you're doing things right, if you have the right sessions, all these things. It shouldn't cost you more money if you're doing things correctly. It's just, is it going to be more work? Now, so we've kind of over like the normal sports bettor, the guy that's just kind of doing this for fun, sometimes wins, sometimes loses, and just wants to know how to do those things. Guys who put more work into it, it's kind of like a for-profit hobby or even a for-profit job like me. What's the best way to go about that? Is Schedule C the best way to do it and report your income there? Should you be creating an S-Corp, a C-Corp, a partnership? Is there varying differences in benefits based on those, based on the state? Like what are some things that they should know or look into in case they are in that position of I'm doing this for money and I'm consistently winning?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great question. That's a loaded question too. So we have a lot of clients as well that, when based on the fact pattern, are doing this full time or a business, right? That this is the only source of income. They put in over 40 hours a week on analysis and betting structure and schemes and things of that nature, and they put in a significant amount of money in order for this endeavor. So if you do hit those, what they're called nine non-exclusive factors of a business, then yeah, we would suggest, you know, setting that up. Now, keep in mind before we get into this that even though you are a professional or you are for a business, the IRS rules stipulate that yes, you can deduct your expenses, but you cannot deduct more. You cannot take a loss. So ultimately, you can, you know, if you have gambling losses from casinos or DFS, but wins in sports betting, you could put that together and then deduct your expenses, but you cannot go past zero. So that's one thing that one has to consider. But yeah, this the most simple form is putting it on a Schedule C on your 1040. Now, we don't advise that because the Schedule C, out of all the forms, is a little bit more scrutinized form that the IRS will take a look at, right? And we're trying to mitigate audit risk. Now, when I talk about audit risk, I'm not talking about like a 30% chance or automatic red flag. But, you know, if we're increasing it from 2% to 3%, you know, that's material, right? No one wants to deal with an audit. I've dealt with audits. We've beaten them, and it stinks for everyone. So with the Schedule C also, you get taxed what is called FICA tax, right? You're considered a self-employed individual. So you have to pay payroll tax, which people, you know, pay all the time in their paycheck. It's Social Security and Medicare. But when you're self-employed, you have to pay the employer portion and the employee portion because you're self-employed. So that tax is 15.3%. So because of the audit risk and then the additional FICA tax, we like to get people off of a Schedule C. And where do we put them? Well, we help individuals set up an LLC, a limited liability company, and then we tax them as an S corp. Okay. So when you do that, the S corporation is a tax entity, and that entity is filed on a form called an 1120S. All right, it's an 1120S. It's an informational form. And there you'll report all your activities, your wins, your losses, if you have expenses, telecommunication, meals, if you're traveling to Vegas, what have you, if you're in a final, DFS final, that travel, you name it. So you put it there and you house that activity there. And then that's where you could do some really good stuff, tax mitigating, right? You're gonna have to set up a salary It's called reasonable compensation. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you reduce your audit risk because that form isn't that tax. And then you also can reduce your tax liability. I also have clients that set up partnerships. You know, I actually have one client that actually set up an investment fund where they've gathered, you know, they've gathered money, and they have, you know, runners or other individuals placing the bets in, and they're providing that information and then generating income. So there's definitely things that you can do if you find yourself in a professional setting, right? As a professional, you got to get there. You got to be true to yourself, right? You can't have a W-2 that's $100,000, you know, or plus it doesn't even matter the amount, but if it's what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, you have a 9-to-5, that moonlighting of a professional gambler, it's a little bit tough to accept. You know, unfortunately, the IRS looks at, you know, moonlighting or a professional gambler with a more serious scope than, say, for instance, you were an Uber driver, right? Or, you know, what other moonlighting or selling stuff on eBay that you'll put on Schedule C. But that's just the landscape and what you can do if you're a professional gambler.
Yeah, so this brings up an interesting thing, too. We talked about runners, and we're not talking about breaking terms of service or anything like that. Like, we'll use the scenario of your buddy's in Vegas. He places a bet for you. That bet wins, and let's say $10,000. So your buddy sends over the $10,000.
Right.
Buddy might be worried about, oh, am I going to get taxed on this? May not have gotten a 1099-G. What, in that scenario, what would you have them most likely do? Like, would you fill out a 1099 and give that to him if there was no 1099 that was actually given to the original guy that made the bet? Would you just report it? Would you leave a note in there? What would you generally do in that situation?
Yeah, no, definitely. And we actually see that a lot, right? Unfortunately, you know, the casinos, and I'm sure you're aware of this, right? If you got an edge and you're winning, you know, the casinos will limit you ASAP, right? Any prop bets, whatever bets that you're placing. So we do see what we call proxy bettors, right? Our clients have now been limited or what have you, and now they're going, reaching out to friends and family. So in that case, especially in the recreational side of things, right? What we do is that I tell them, I advise them, listen, you have to establish, you know, an agreement, right, with that runner or that proxy bettor. And ultimately at the end of the day, that activity is on that runner's social security number, right? Hypothetically, whether there's a W-2G or not, it's he earned it under his social. So what we do is we advise the client that pay the increase in tax off of that income that the runner had earned. So in your situation, if you had someone go to Nevada or what have you, and they place a bet and they win $10,000, well, they'll move the money over. It's under 17K. It's a gift, but they'll move it over. No questions asked. But on the runner side, he would report that $10,000 as gambling income. And so what we do is we say, hey, that runner, prepare your tax return without the income, figure out your tax liability or refund, add the gambling income on top of that. And that increase, that spread is what, you know, the original bettor will pay. They will help pay for that and provide it. So that what we found is the easiest way in these situations to do it. Now, there's a lot of times there's rev share, right? You know, that if someone's a runner, they're going to get 10% of the winnings or what have you. So then you just adjust it where the runner only reports their portion of the gambling winnings plus every other thing, all the other taxable income. And then the total gambling and that spread right there is what the original bettor would pay. If that makes sense, what I'm outlining.
I mean, to an extent. So it's essentially just taxing the income under the runner tax return and then getting it back as a gift.
Yeah, exactly. Depending on how much it gets.
The taxable amount. Yeah. 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 And then, yeah, different.
If you start preparing 1099s, right now, what happens is you're throwing out more flares to the IRS, and you're sending income to another person, but you yourself can't take that deduction. That's the problem. If you said that, hey, $50,000 was his, you can't take that deduction. There's no place to put it unless you're a professional gambler or what have you.
Yeah. Yeah. So that makes sense there. One last thing that we should probably get into that maybe not a ton of people are doing, but is incredibly complex right now, has brought up all sorts of questions over the last 2 years or so, is Rainmakers DFS, like obviously using NFTs to play DFS, and there's valuations of NFTs and all sorts of different taxable issues that come and potential 1099s. You can be in a situation where, oh, I didn't make money on this, but I'm getting taxed on the value of these NFTs. So what are some situations that you've run into? What are some situations that you think people need to watch out for? And what are some things they can do to kind of know if they should be playing Rainmakers, if the tax liability is potentially going to be more of a problem than the actual income coming in?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And if you're good at it, then that's great, but at least know this information. So what I found, and I've had a couple clients this past tax season really get hit too, is that you have to understand with Rainmakers and NFTs, it's a two-part transaction, okay? First, you're buying the cards, which are NFTs. So think of that as you're buying stock, okay? In the tax world, they're taxed the same way. So you buy the NFTs, and then you use them, the player cards, to then build up your roster and then play DFS. But what happens is you pay money for that NFT, but that cost gets moved to the side as what's called a capital cost. It's as if you own stock. So what people are getting blindsided is that they win $50,000, let's say, in DFS, right? You need, in Rainmakers, you need the NFT, and they get a 10, but they pay $25,000 for these NFTs, and then all of a sudden they get a 1099 miscellaneous for $50,000. They don't have it net to 25. If you were playing regular DFS and you have your entry fees and you pay $25,000 in entry fees, but you won 50, the net that's going to happen on your 1099 is going to be ported $25,000. So what people are seeing is that they have to report the full amount of their DFS winnings because there's no entry fees, and the cost that they paid for the NFTs are over here. But the problem is, if you go to sell your NFTs or you sell it at a loss, right? Because that's what a lot of people have been saying, that, hey, now they're worthless, they're deemed worthless, so there's going to be a loss. Well, because they're considered a capital stock or a capital asset, the max you could report as a loss on your tax return is $3,000. So if you were to sell all your NFTs and you had a loss of $25,000 and you had no other stock transactions or mutual funds, it's just the NFTs, the max you could write off in a given year is $3,000. And then the other 22 gets carried forward. So you find yourself paying more taxes than you originally imagined. And that's the pitfall of Rainmakers and playing that.
Is there a way to increase that $3,000 threshold, like running it through an LLC?
So again, great question. Similar situation with everything else, right? If you find yourself that you are a business or a professional, right? Again, the 99 exclusive factors, I'm not going to list them all out, but ultimately 40 plus hours a week, material amount that you're invested in, this is literally what you do day in and day out, then yes, you can put that into your LLC and incorporate that line of activity with everything else, right? Your sports betting, your DFS. Now, what it does though is those NFTs, because you're doing this as a hobby, you're a broker, you're a dealer, it actually changes them from like a capital investment to what is considered like inventory. So there you're able to directly write off that, you know, that $25,000 in this example, against your income. Okay. But you have to get to that point to say, hey, you know, I'm a dealer. I'm doing this every single day. I'm buying and selling NFTs as part of, through Rainmakers, as part of also playing DFS. Thus, you know, those costs of that NFT, I get to deduct right away. And that's kind of how you'll be able to. But if you're a recreational, it goes right into what is called the Schedule D, and it gets placed all along with your mutual funds and your stocks, and the max you can deduct in a given year is $3,000.
All right. Good to know. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about before we get out of here? Anything I might have missed? Anything recreational better should probably know in addition to all this?
You know, I mean, just be careful with, you know, 1099K in the documentation that gets provided to the IRS, right? What we tell people is that tell your own story, right? Right now it's gray area. And with nothing set in stone in regards to the session, the less you send to the IRS, the better, because then that way you could take a look at your Excel file, right? And you could take a look at your betting structure and your journal, right? I suggest anyone who's betting every single day to set up, you know, your own journal, whether it's an Excel file, make sure you have the date stamp, the type of bet, what you placed, you know, your wager, what you won, all that. And you keep that journal. And that way you can dictate, hey, I'm an annual session. I took a look. I'm playing every single day, NBA, NCAA, then I'm going into baseball season and then football, back to basketball. I'm every single day, or if you're an R bet or what have you, I want an annual session. You have the tools to prove it, right? So that's what I would just suggest. Always keep, if you are doing this a lot, whether it's recreational or not, keep accurate records and try and limit the amount of documents sent to the IRS. W-2Gs, we talked about that. If you're doing casinos, watch out for a 1,200 pull or more unless you're in Vegas. 1099-K, don't use PayPal. There's certain states where the threshold is very low. Illinois is one of them. Right now, the threshold for a 1099-K is $20,000 received and over, and I think, 200 transactions, but that's even being fought at. And right now, they want to bring it down to 600. So try not to use PayPal, especially if you're in states like Illinois, where it's a $1,000 threshold and four transactions. Keep winning, you know, try and beat the odds. That's all I can say.
Yep. All right. Well, that should just about do it. Mike, thanks for joining me. Where can people find you? How to reach you, how to reach DFS Accounting, and we'll get out of here.
No, for sure. Definitely. I mean, we're here to help, right? You know, we do a 30-minute intro call to talk about the individual's tax situations and ask any or answer any questions that they may ask. You know, it's a gray area, and you know, it's one that likes to sports bet and plays season long in DFS. You know, this is what we do, and just trying to help out people mitigate their taxes. So if you have any questions, you can inquire. We have a vanity email. It's info@dfsaccounting.com. You can visit our website at dfsaccounting.com. And, you know, give us a shout, send us an email, and we'll be happy to help you out.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Mike. Everyone, good luck on your taxes. And reach out if you need it. We're out of here.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. Take care.